We have a ton of business. If we have any public hearings, we're going to hold them to 5 minutes or something like that. So we'll have one proponent and one opponent if there is one. There are lots of wonderful things you have to say. Send us written stuff for the record. I am going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 14 and invite, well, let's see. Jim Hauser, let's have all three for about 1 minute each. Darlene Huntress and John Williams. I think we're prepared to pass it, so
okay.
You have five votes. Don't go for four.
That's the bill.
All right. We'll try to keep this brief.
My name is Ron Williams. I'm the executive director of Oregon Action, which is a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit network of people and organizations dedicated to racial, social, and economic justice. Thank you for the opportunity to come here today to express Oregon Action's support for House Joint Memorial 14 that urges Congress to enact legislation that will allow the Federal Department of Health and Human Services to negotiate Medicare prescription drug prices. I'm happy to share the table here today with our national network partner, the Alliance for a Just Society, and our small business organizing state partner, the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. I have a report that I'll from the Center for Economic and Policy Research entitled State Savings with an Efficient Medicare Prescription Drug Benefit. I'll give that to your clerk and you can read through it, but the report basically states that the Oregon state government could save as much as $766 million over 10 years if the federal government were allowed to negotiate Medicare drug costs in the same way that other wealthy nations do. Currently, the Department of Veterans Affairs and state Medicaid programs already do this and pay far less for drugs. Our hope is that this memorial will be the catalyst that will move all of Oregon's congressional delegation to sign on to support the legislation at the federal level, and that would lead to significant savings for the state of Oregon and for Oregon's Medicare beneficiaries.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Darlene Huntress. I live here in Salem, so Representative Clem is my representative. I am also the national organizer for the Alliance for a Just Society. We are a coalition of 9 state-based organizations, including Oregon Action, and we work on campaigns that address health, social, economic, racial inequities. I'm not going to read my written testimony to you. I know that you all have it. I would just say one thing about this issue. It's ironic to me that I'm here testifying in front of you because about 20 minutes ago, I got off the phone with my mom, who is a senior citizen. She and my dad are both retired. They live on a fixed income. They live off Social Security. My mother has a debilitating nerve disease that keeps her awake at night and has been a real issue for her for most of her adult life. And there's a medicine that would help her exponentially, but she cannot afford to take that medicine because the price of the prescription drug is so high. My father, who is 75 years old, still works part-time at 75 to make ends meet to pay for the 8 different prescription drug prices that my parents currently have each month, as well as groceries, heating oil, all of it.
Wrap up.
You're putting my parents up against the pharmaceutical lobby, so I really believe that this is a no-brainer. I want to thank Representative Buckley for taking leadership position on this, and I hope that you all will support people like my mom and dad and not the pharmaceutical lobby by passing this resolution. Thanks.
That means if we don't pass it, we support the
pharmaceutical lobby. It's going to be really bad for you and me, sir. We're going to go tete-a-tete.
Sounds like a threat.
No, it'll be fun.
It will be.
Chair Green, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hauser. I'm co-owner of Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Portland and co-chair of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. I'm here today to express our support for HJM 14. I can say quickly that as my workforce is aging, we cover everyone's health care, including their dependents, but as our workforce is aging, so is our customer base, and they rely more and more heavily on both the Social Security and Medicare, that it's critically important for them to be able to maintain their vehicles, for example, their standard of living, that they be able to control costs like the costs of pharmaceuticals. By not allowing Medicare to negotiate on the cost of prescription drugs, Congress has created a monopoly relationship between Medicare and the pharmaceutical companies that harken back to the era when the Pentagon was purchasing things like $435 hammers, $640 toilet seats, and $7,000 coffee makers. Working families and the elderly and poor are, in essence, being forced to fund the lobby efforts of the pharmaceuticals. Allowing Medicare to negotiate for price will reinstate the basic principles of market economics. Vigorous bargaining can create the incentive the pharmaceutical industry needs to review their cost structures and sharpen their pencils, with the potential to lower prescription drug costs for all Americans. Main Street Alliance urges you to join us in calling on Congress to empower Medicare to push back on unreasonable prescription drug costs. Thank you for your time.
And thank you very much. And thank you for willing to take the time to come down here on several important issues. As a small businessman, I know that takes a chunk of your time away, and I appreciate it. I'm going close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 14. And ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt.
Need to open a work session.
Open a work session on House Joint Memorial 14.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt House Joint Memorial 14.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves to adopt House Joint Memorial 14. Are there any questions? Or do you favor the drug lobby?
I would. I'm kind of willing to take that. Where's just watch you two go toe to toe. Head-to-head.
That would be fun. I do need to comment that I put on the record on the floor once a session. I guess I'll put on the record here once a session. I think these things are totally useless. It's nice to have symbolic. It's great. I hate the pharmacy industry. You guys in Washington, damn you, do something. Well, do something on everything, not only this. Anyway, I love the sentiment, so I'm a yes. Yes.
I just heard all your bills die in Ways and Means.
That for the record. I'm sorry, Senator Representative Buckley, wherever you are.
Mr. Chair, I actually do love the pharmaceuticals. You know, the drugs treat me well.
Well, then vote your conscience, you're a great American. Would you call the roll, please? We have so much to do today.
I am Representative Buckley's bill.
You have bills in Ways and Means, too.
Yes,
huh?
I do.
I do,
for the moment.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Hammer?
Aye.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny
Geyer? Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We'll make Buckley try and explain this to the floor.
I would like to add. We probably shouldn't be so harsh on the pharmaceutical lobby for doing their job and getting their results. How about we look at the elected officials who follow that lead without question? And unlike this building, where legislators are absolutely independent of any outside influence, that's not the way it is in Washington, you know.
Right. There's no truth test in this thing.
Representative, are you saying that the lobbyists in Washington, D.C. are better than the ones here?
They're richer.
This hearing.
Mr. Chair, I thought we were short on time. Could we please proceed?
This committee is not about lobbying. You know,
if anybody is here today on House Bill 2132, we are carrying 2132 over. We're carrying a bunch of other ones over, too, but we'll talk about 2132.
Oh, there we go.
The so-called churn bill. That's being carried over. Okay.
on the back page.
There's a whole list on the back page.
Okay.
Close the work session on House Joint Memorial 14. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2078. Same rules. Let's make it really quick.
2087.
I'm sorry, 2087. And what do we have on that one?
I get 2087.
Judy, are you?
Back page. Yes. 2087.
Mm-hmm. Judy, will you open this up for us? Then we have Bill Hagel, and that's it. Fast, fast, fast.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Judy Moore Peterson. I'm the Director of Medical Assistance Programs with the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm testifying very briefly on 2087, the -1 amendments. Just wanted to state that this allows us to claim federal match on inmates when they have an inpatient stay. Under federal Medicaid law, we cannot claim federal match for inmates unless they are have an inpatient stay, and this bill allows the Department of Corrections, along with the local sheriff's office, et cetera, to be able to sign the Medicaid application on behalf of the inmate, which will allow us to get more individuals Medicaid eligible under these specific circumstances. So it will allow some savings in the end for healthcare costs, because we'll be able to claim federal match.
Mr. Hagel?
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee. I'm Bill Hagel, the Health Services Administrator at the Oregon Department of Corrections. We worked on this jointly with both OHA and the Department of Justice to draft this language, and pretty much what she said, done.
Is there any opposition to this?
No.
That's my impression. Thank you for your... And it's hateful, I see, not a G. Yeah. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2087. And open up a work session on House Bill 2087. We have a -1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/12/13 to House Bill 2087.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/12/13 to House Bill 2087. Is there any discussion? Any objection? -1's in it.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2087 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Why is this in the Ways and Means?
Because fiscal says it goes to Ways and Means.
Yeah. Because it has
an impact on the budget.
Positive.
Yeah.
It has a positive.
Well, yeah. Okay. Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 2087 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. This is one that will probably get up. Not by prior reference. We're doing it ourselves. Being referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. This is one that could get out of Ways and Means, right? Is there any discussion?
Depends on what you say.
This would actually...
That's what I say.
And if they're listening.
I'd rather see it not go to Ways and Means, because they're going to steal the money from the department.
Well, the department wasn't too worried about that, so it'll save them some money, I think, anyway. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conker?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Tenema?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. 2087 is on its way to Ways and Means. We're still waiting on the healthcare study. That's going, huh? I mean, the Ways and Means, right?
Yes.
We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3260. Will you tell us what that bill is about, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3260 requires the Oregon Health Authority conduct study examining at least four options for financing health care in Oregon, specifies criteria for evaluating those options, requires a report include recommendation based on established criteria, requires the authority solicit gifts, grants, and other funds for purpose of carrying out the study, requires the report interim health care committee into the 2015 regular session of legislature, and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
And we're broadening the study by those amendments to include some other kinds of issues that fit nicely into that. And it is going to Ways and Means, so let's have some. And there's no objection to it from anybody that I could find.
That we know.
That we know. Nobody's coming forward. We have some motions. Who's gone? She can do all the work today?
Mm-hmm.
No. We can do all three amendments at once, I think.
Okay.
Huh?
3260.
Three amendments.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that we, I don't see it. Oh, thank you. Adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/2/13, the -2 amendments dated 4/9/13, and the -3 amendments dated 4/10/13 to House Bill 3260.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the -1 amendments dated 4/2/13, the -2 amendments dated 4/9/13, and the -3 amendments dated 4/10/13 to House Bill 3260. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Any objection? So amended.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3260 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 3260 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? No. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Harper?
Aye.
Representative Hammer?
Aye.
Representative Rogers?
Aye.
Representative
Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Breeden?
Aye. Well, they're on its way to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 3260. Open a work session on House Bill 2020. And as I believe we've already adopted the threes and the four amendments, is that right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2020 requires coordinated care organizations to accept credentials of mental health treatment providers and chemical dependency treatment providers found by another CCO to meet credentialing requirements and object to quality standards, requires emergency effective on its passage. -3 amendments require the Oregon Health Authority to adopt by rule credentialing standards for mental health treatment providers and chemical dependency treatment providers. And the -4 amendment requires the Oregon Health Authority to adopt by rule requirements for programs to qualify as mental health treatment providers and chemical dependency treatment providers.
And just as a reminder, this is not about individual credentialing. It's about the credentialing of organizations like the Morrison Center and other. Is there any discussion on this motion? Oh, we don't have the motion.
What is the motion?
Who's got the motion?
I have the motion.
Go for it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2020 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2020 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Next bill is
yes, sir.
During the floor session, I got some responses that I haven't had time to completely read, and then I just literally just now realized Rep. Nathanson had sent us some responses. But I wanted to hear from at least Mr. Ballack at some point on what he thought of the responses, because they were responses to his questions. But I literally right now just emailed him the letter because he hasn't seen either of them. So I don't know that it's going to really be possible to get his comments because he's had it for probably 8 or 9 seconds now.
Is that talking for Ballack here?
Yes, I am.
Want to join us?
It's probably, may not have even gotten it yet.
I got your name right today.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I literally just received some comments back from Representative Nathanson that Representative Clem had. I'm literally on to section 2 that was the response, so I can't comment on what I haven't read. So,
okay. Well, we can move it on and let them be covered in the Senate, or we can hold over till Monday, whichever is your preference.
Or even a little later today, like in another 30 or 45
sure.
minutes, maybe.
That's right. Let's do that. We'll close the public, the work session on House Bill 2020 and come back to it later. That'd be great.
Thank you. Yeah.
You guys would like to meet also somewhere along the line. Yeah. Stay here for both.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to open a, you ready? A big fanfare?
Yeah. Oh.
Open the work session on House Bill 2997. I think that's, is that a familiar bill to you?
Yeah. Very familiar. So we have a lot of amendments on this one. Let me see. The wrong one in front of me. I'm going to, the wrong one in front of me.
Mr. Larson, why don't you tell us about this
dash
bill
5
while we're
and dash 10 are the ones that you want to.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2997 defines licensure requirements for direct entry midwifery and requires the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery to adopt rules that authorize the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery to investigate complaints and take disciplinary action, including special revocation of license and assessment of civil penalties. The Dash 5 Amendment removes toxicomotics from the list of drugs DM may prescribe and grants the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery authority to conduct investigations and hold disciplinary hearings. The Dash 10 Amendments allow licensing exemption for individuals who do not use legend drugs or devices, do not advertise, and disclose a lack of licensure to each client.
Dr. K. Guy, you've done your person job getting this to where it is now. Tell us
so
the
try
key
to
points.
Make that the key points that are that there are some technical fixes in the I-5 having to do with what can be carried by direct entry midwives and people who have exemptions from direct entry midwifery license. That's the five, along with a slight change in the rulemaking and final authority process. In the original bill, basically the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery was taking on more of the actually carrying out some of the investigations, and the fiscals were going to be run through the Direct Entry Midwifery Board as opposed to staying in Oregon Health Authority. So right now, the fiscal will stay as is. In Oregon Health, OLA, Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and the rulemaking authority is more clearly defined and restricted to final authority on rulemaking, rulemaking and contested cases and investigations. So there's certain sign-offs that they have along the way. It gives them actually more authority than any of the other boards that are within OLA, but doesn't have them actually carrying out those functions themselves. So I'm looking for nods from Holly Mercer in the audience, who's runs
keep
OLA.
Talking.
Okay, so that's the Dash 5.
So
the Dash 10 has to do with exemptions. And as you may have recalled from our previous conversations, we had a variety of different ideas on exemptions. It's probably been the hardest piece for people to come together on, and I wouldn't say it's a total coming together. I don't know that we'll ever get a total coming together on it. But what this does is, rather than say somebody is for cultural or religious purposes exempt, that proposes it proposes a constitutional question: who is a part of a cultural group, who is a part of a religious group. It makes it very hard for the Oregon Health Authority and the Direct Entry Midwifery Board to determine who is a part of these groups. So it says that a traditional midwife, and then it adds a variety of restrictions that if you're claiming an exemption as a traditional midwife, you can't carry life-saving drugs or devices. You cannot advertise. This is a new one from the last bill. You can't advertise as a midwife. Obviously, you can't advertise as a licensed midwife, but you can't even advertise as a midwife at all. Part of that is trying to really drive people in a market sense toward providing the business to licensed providers who are going through the trouble and the expense to get a license. So they're the ones that can advertise as a midwife, and if you're not, if you're a traditional midwife with an exemption from the license, that you may not advertise. It's also a very, it gets at the idea of kind of the self-limiting that we wanted with the cultural religious, because if you're not advertising and you're part of the Russian Orthodox or you're part of a Native American tribe, you're likely to be known within that context. And lastly, it has the, for the exempt piece, it has an even stronger informed consent than we had before. You have to declare that you're not licensed, that there's no regulation. There's no place to issue a complaint. There's no one checking over your education and qualifications. That's a new one from before. That you have to say you have to have discussed a transport plan if anything goes wrong. That's a new one from before. So I think we really worked hard to try to tighten up the informed consent and the parameters around exemptions as much as possible. I think part of this is that I know that not everyone is happy about this. There are some people who would like not to see exemptions or to have a sunset on exemptions, and the concern with that is that we're going from one of the least restrictive states to, you know, really regulating, and something like that saying no exemptions really puts it down of one of the most restrictive states. But it also, for me, one of the biggest things about that is it takes away the informed consent piece, and I do believe that there will be people out there who are going to be operating, and it's safer to have it with an exemption. We know who they are, and they're doing informed consent. So I feel like this is a really good piece of legislation. I'm excited that it's gotten this far. It's not perfect. I'm committed to working on it.
As well.
The dash one. I thought dash five.
Did have dash one.
I thought dash five included the dash ones.
All right, let me raise another issue.
Okay.
The fiscal points out that the dash fives remove the language establishing a separate account, and the dash tens contain language establishing a separate account. So I've just called for the drafter to come up and make sure when you adopt the dash 10,
that we don't counteract
renews what the dash one is, and we'll ask him when he comes whether the dash fives include the dash ones.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Question, if I may.
Yeah, let's have some discussion if we have it.
It's kind of disadvantage not to have some lead time to work on this.
I'm
intrigued with the notion, and I think I like the notion of the informed consent. My concern is how is that enforced, or what is the penalty, or how does that really work? Because, you know, are they really going to do it?
So, can I answer? And I'd be happy for you to invite anyone up at any point.
Happy,
but
I think it's mainly towards you because you've been working on it.
So I just need to understand it. I'm not the expert by any means, but the idea is that we will. First of all, the Board of Direct Entry Midwives and the Oregon Midwifery Association. Saying that right? Oregon Association knows a lot of who is out there practicing and unlicensed. I think it's somewhere around 120 direct entry midwives, and maybe 40 or 45 of them are unlicensed at this point. There's also a requirement, if anyone is going to fill out a birth certificate, there's a requirement for annual registration through the Oregon Health Authority vital records. And normally midwives fill that out because for a parent to fill it out, which is also a possibility, there are more steps they have to go through. And so it really saves parents a lot of trouble if the midwife or the attending person helping with the baby does this on a normal basis. It makes more sense for them to fill it out. And so the vital records also has keeps track of who is out there delivering babies. That doesn't mean that we know absolutely everyone, but there's a pretty good sense of the majority of people who are delivering babies right now.
Change
the Oregon
your mind.
Health Authority.
I'll give you some help.
Okay.
Holly, will you?
Well, I was going to say that while she comes up, the Oregon Health Authority Vital Records has said that they are happy to add a bullet to when they send out. They say you have to give your address, you have to do all this, and they can help the Oregon Midwifery Association and the Board of Direct Entry Midwives in getting the word out to people that
but
this informed consent.
The question is, what if they don't do it?
So if they don't do it, there's a penalty up to $5,000 in here, which is a civil penalty if any piece of this law is broken.
I assume it'll be complaint-driven, is that
yes. Right? Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm an interim executive director for the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. I think this piece was somewhat problematic, but I think the benefit of having this specific disclosure statement, at least in print, in statute, it is really an absolutely small group of people that we need to communicate with, both licensed and unlicensed. I think that we will work more collaboratively with the health authority going forward. There is a possibility that our agency may come within the health authority at the end of this session. And we've already started communication with them, so we're going to identify the people that we can. If a complaint comes in and they are not licensed, we would have to review whether or not, at least under Dash 10, they are a traditional midwife, that they went through the steps. Certainly, it would have an impact on the civil penalty that would be issued. If they are truly a traditional midwife, they took all the steps that they needed to do, then, in theory, there would be no civil penalty. But what we could do is investigate that, and it's moving toward a full disclosure. And I think that's what this bill is trying to do. I think it definitely moves us in the right direction in terms of safer outcomes.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Please.
So just to follow up. So if there is a complaint, it would go to you or to your office?
Most likely it would go to our office.
Should go to your
yes.
office. Then your office would review it. If you thought there was cause, you would investigate it. And
yes.
then, and in the process of that, then you would determine whether or not and how much of a fine is generated.
That's correct, Chair Greenlick and Representative Kenninger. If Kenimer, if we look at it from if they're a licensed midwife, they would have to be working within their scope.
Yeah,
if
I'm
they are
more
not
concerned about the non-licensed.
That's correct. So if they are non-licensed, we would then look to see if they fulfilled the duties that they should have fulfilled mm-hmm. under their non-licensure, and then we can issue a sanction. But you know, it's always about enforcement. It's whether or not they end up paying. But it would most likely be a civil penalty for practicing without a license.
All right. Let's.
And that's not a crime to practice without a license if you don't do the disclosure.
That is my understanding, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Civil penalty is all.
That's why I just all right. need that. Why don't we get amendments on the 5 through 10? And we'll make sure we haven't done anything wrong before we move further. Who's got this one?
For Mark.
Motion's on the phone,
too. Do we have a motion?
In a minute.
All right.
You want me to move?
Yeah, I'm waiting for a motion.
Okay. I move, get the language. I move that we pass the Dash 5 amendment dated 4-8-13 to House Bill 2997.
That's the only amendment?
Oh, and, I'm sorry, and, sorry, you wanted to do 10. And that we move the Dash 10 amendment stated 4-10-13 to House Bill 2997.
Not 6, 7, and 8?
Nope. Those were variations of the 5.
So the 5 is what we want and the 10.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. What's the date on the 10?
4-10-13.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the Dash 5 amendment stated 4-8-13 and the Dash 10 amendment stated 4-10-13 to House Bill 2997. Is there any objection?
Let's see here, but it's not Mark Mayer.
Can you join us? Thank you. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Marisa James, Deputy Legislative Counsel, who did not draft this bill.
No,
but I will do my best
close.
To answer your question.
I think you can answer the question. We have a Dash 5 and a Dash 10 amendment. The Dash 5 amendment removes the language establishing a separate account in OLC, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency.
Okay.
The Dash 10 puts the account back in.
But it doesn't say that.
It doesn't. Well, that's what the fiscal says.
Oh, that doesn't make any sense.
Fiscal says, however, the Dash 10 amendment contains language establishing a separate direct entry midwife account from the Oregon Health Licensing account.
Can I see the amendment?
It doesn't say it.
Oh, fiscal.
I think they just made a mistake.
Oh, that would be good. Which is it we want? We want it in or out?
We want it, the five.
Out.
Right.
Yeah, the Dash 10 doesn't appear to have anything to do with accounts.
Excellent. It's just a mistake on fiscal's part.
Okay.
Good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for coming down.
I'm all confused. Maybe we should just bring this back in February.
We have fives and tens now on the bill. Now let's have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 2997 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
And this doesn't have a subsequent?
No. I don't think so. It does? Plus
license.
And a subsequent referral to
Ways
and
Means. Does it have a subsequent?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you got penalties, you got licenses.
Yeah, that's those accounts.
Okay.
By prior reference. Representative Kitty Geyer moves House Bill 2997 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Chairman,
yes.
Just a question. So did we include both the dash fives and the dash tens?
We did in the single motion.
Thank you. But they didn't. The tens didn't reverse. The
tens did not.
Thank you. Okay.
There was a mistake in the fiscal impact statement.
Thank you.
Please call the roll.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative
Kinnemer? Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative
Weiner?
No.
Vice Chair
Kinnegeyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2997 is on its way to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you and Representative Parrish for the extraordinary amount of work you guys did. And all you folks in the audience that worked with them that have been involved in this, it's been a long and tedious journey, but I think it's getting us toward our destination. I trust you'll take responsibility for keeping an eye on it in Ways and Means to see if we can get it moving. Okay. $21.22 is the one we're not ready for, is that right? $21.22 or $21.32?
$21.22 needs to be carried over as well.
What's 21? Oh.
You already carried over.
$21.22 is the dental transfer?
Yes.
We are carrying over $21.22. We have, I'll go over those when we're done to make sure we get it right, but we have some dueling amendments on that one, and we're trying to work our way to some rational outcome. Okay. Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2347. Mr. Administrator?
348.
I've only been one off lately.
Yeah.
Okay. That was close.
Good. That's pretty close.
That's close.
2248.
2348. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2348.
There you go.
Establishes a task force on the future of public health services to study regionalization and consolidation of public health services and make recommendation for legislation. Requires task force report to enter in committee no later than October 1st, 2014. Requires the Oregon Health Authority to provide staff support for the task force. Requires all state agencies assist the task force in performance of its duties. Sunsets the task force on the date of convening of the 2016 regular session legislative assembly and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
You heard testimony last time on this bill, which creates a group to look at the future of public health, including the possibility of some regionalization. There was concerns from the local public health officers and a county commissioner. And that was the main concern, and strong support from everybody else. We worked on an amendment to the bill, which takes into consideration their concerns. It adds another local public health officer to the task force. It stretches out the time frame for it so that it's not due to report until October of 2014. And it doesn't presuppose regionalization. It includes language about evaluating or studying regionalization. I think it has no opposition in its current form, unless anybody out there thinks it does. So I'm ready for an amendment on the dash two amendments and on the bill itself.
This is your last one, I think.
Want me to move it?
Please.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendment stated 410-13 to House Bill 2348.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2348, dated 410-13. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Was the issue of regional models versus best models addressed?
It generalizes that statement in the -2 and talks about evaluating the future of public health, including considering regional models.
Including.
Yeah. Yeah, rather than presupposing.
Yes, that's the
giving point. A report on regional models. This puts it a part of the consideration of the task force.
Okay, thank you.
At which they can come back under this model and say no.
Yes.
But here's what you should do. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Just going through, looking at this, I'm just wondering what it's going to do to the CCO model that we just set up. So looking at the 8 regionals.
This relates to the issues of public health around the CCO. Disease surveillance, restaurants, water, epidemiology, environmental health, all the other functions of public health, which remain to be carried out, even though we have a CCO. Theoretically, we'll be doing some of that public health things, although not necessarily. So, yeah, it's okay. Now we got CCOs. What do we do with the rest of public health? Did we pass the?
We passed the
amendments.
No, there were.
We're still discussing.
Any objections to the amendments? -2s are part of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2348 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 2348 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. We have authority to do that, is that right?
Yes, we do.
Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative
Parker? Aye.
Representative
Hanemer?
Aye.
Representative
Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative
Whiteley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Green
Dyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Conger? Aye. Chair Green. Aye. Motion passes. I'll carry it. We have a slight task. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2348 and open up a work session on House Bill 3309. The only purpose of this work session is to move that bill to the Committee on Rules. I promise the higher authorities that I will behave myself and be nice on this and not tell you how stupid I think the bill really is. But I'm sorry, did I say that?
Yeah, what are you not going to say?
I have a motion on House Bill 3309.
Do you have it? Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3309 to the floor without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 3309 to the floor without recommendation and that the bill be passed to the Committee on Rules. I do have to admit that I asked the clerk of the House whether it'd be possible to send a bill on with a do not pass recommendation. I was told that was not possible. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, since I probably hold the same opinion as you, I will exercise my no vote option on this bill for you. And if other members join me, we could.
No, let's pass it on. You don't want to get me in big trouble.
Let's keep it to moderate trouble.
Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kennedy?
Aye.
Representative
Whitner?
Aye. Representative Whitner?
No.
And Vice
Chair
Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
You can.
I'm sorry, did you call me?
Yes.
Aye. Motion carries. Bill goes to the Committee on Rules. Okay. We have these for public hearings only, is that right?
That's correct.
Oh, are we ready to bring 2020 back up? Josh, are you ready to talk about it?
About five more minutes, I think,
okay,
and
good.
We'll be good.
Cool. Just trying to make sure I get everything here I'm supposed to get. Well, let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2353. So, Kenmer, do you want to talk about this one very briefly? Do not? Okay, who we got? Charlie Johnson, John Mill, and Larry Connor, please be very brief. Then we'll have Ben Lindsay and David Reinhardt.
Minutes each.
Please introduce yourself.
Chair Greenlick and members of the House Health Care Committee, my name is Miralee Johnson. Kind of afraid to say that I'm a pharmacist based on the earlier conversation.
I'm a pharmacist in recovery, so it's
so I'm just here to say I'm a client of talk therapy from non-medical healthcare practitioners. I think there's a big need for that, and I'm just wanting to make anything I can do to help make sure that it stays around. It sounds to me like due to lower reimbursement, some of the people are either retiring or going into public sector, and I just think that talk therapy is very important and needs to be covered under insurance plans.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask my administrator to tell us what this bill is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2353 requires insurer to report to the Director of Department of Consumer Business Services and methodology for reimbursement of clinical social workers, requires House Senate Committee on Health Care to study reimbursement rates established by insurers for behavioral health care providers, and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
Thank you.
There's only one other thing I want to say. My son was diagnosed with ADD when he was in school, needed to use the ADA Act, the Disabilities Act, when he was in college to help him take exams. To do that, he needed an examination by a psychologist or a psychiatrist. We called around. It took like 6 months to get into a psychologist or a psychiatrist. If someone's having an acute problem, that's way too long to wait. They need a regular therapist to talk to.
Thank you. Yes, next, please.
My name is John Milnes. I'm a licensed clinical social worker in private practice and also the president of the Oregon Society of Clinical Social Workers. In 2010, I provided written testimony for House Bill 3607, which is similar to this bill in front of the committee. As you know, insurance reimbursement rates have been largely stagnant for many years, and nothing has really changed since my last testimony. My income has dropped by over 33% since 2008, and sadly, I'm not alone in this. Based on information that we have available, the number of clinical social workers in private practice has also decreased by 33% since 2009. I think this puts talk therapy in jeopardy. As we know, talk therapy provides cost savings as clients that have been in talk therapy frequently utilize other medical services less frequently the year following their treatment. When discussing reimbursement, it's also important to look at expenses. Clinical social workers have fixed expenses that do not flex when there's a sudden downturn in reimbursement rates, such as we incurred in 2009. At my office, we have in-house staff to help with insurance billing and scheduling of appointments. However, most clinical social workers do not have in-house staff. They do much of their own scheduling and much of their own insurance work. Clinical social workers already have very few ways to cut the cost when there is a downturn in reimbursement. And this is certainly problematic because, as we see, 33% of the clinical social workers have been lost since 2009. 1981, the Oregon legislature passed legislation to help ensure greater access to mental health services through clinical social workers. This law included language to promote a stable reimbursement platform by utilizing customary and usual fees of the clinical social workers in the area served. Unfortunately, the state does not have a legal definition for customary and usual, and therefore, the insurance companies have been able to pretty much interpret however they want the statute and set their own rates accordingly. For this reason, I think it's very important to pass House Bill 2353 as a way to understand how reimbursement rates are being determined and to move towards a more reasonable and stable way to calculate these rates. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Larry Connor. I'm speaking to you today as the president of COPACT, Coalition of Oregon Professional Associations for Counseling and Therapy, which represents licensed professional counselors, LPCs, and licensed marriage and family therapists, LMFTs, across Oregon. COPACT supports amending House Bill 2353 to cover LMFTs and LPCs and other licensed mental health care providers. House Bill 2353 will require health insurance carriers to share reimbursement methodology and directs the Interim Health Care Committee to review reimbursement structures for mental health service providers. LPCs and LMFTs have been licensed to practice under Oregon statute since 1991. We are highly trained master's level mental health providers who offer psychotherapy services to individuals of all ages, families, couples, groups, and organizations throughout Oregon. And the 3,500 LPCs, LMFTs, and registered interns work with up to 70,000 Oregonians per week. In 2009, Regents Blue Cross of Oregon dramatically reduced reimbursement rates for behavioral health providers. Master's level providers found their reimbursement reduced nearly 45%. At the same time, Regents closed its provider panel to all psychotherapists, and it has remained closed since then. Due to the reduced reimbursement rates, many licensed providers left the Regents provider panel. The loss of those providers and the permanent closing of the panel has resulted, logically, in a smaller panel serving fewer Oregonians with mental health needs. According to an editorial in the Oregonian dated October 1st, 2011, a similar strategy was put in place by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts at around the same time, perhaps reflecting a larger multi-state approach. The editorial says, quote, "It is obvious what is going on here. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, like other private insurers, aggressively constrained patients' access to mental health care through several covert means, including by limiting provider networks. Policies like these," that was close quote, "policies like these that lead to smaller provider panels are bad for Oregonians in need of care, and they compromise the promise of Oregon's landmark Mental Health Parity Act. LPCs and LMFTs incur significant academic debt achieving our high level of training and experience to obtain licensure. Decreasing reimbursement rates puts a strain on the profession's ability to attract new practitioners, especially in private practice, as John mentioned, and to retain experienced practitioners. This further reduces access to care, especially in rural parts of the state. Decreasing access to the clinically effective provision of psychotherapy will likely result in greater reliance on emergency rooms or law enforcement interventions, which are much more expensive. Furthermore, with fewer psychotherapists available, primary care physicians end up doing more of the work of managing mental illness, which is expensive and not the most efficient use of primary care provider time. It is challenging to expect behavioral health providers to meet their bottom line when carriers arbitrarily reduce reimbursements by 45%. If mental health practitioners and clinics are to survive in Oregon, there has to be full disclosure of insurance rate information so that all parties have the information needed to make informed business decisions and to ensure that adequate panels of providers are available to Oregonians in need of mental health care. House Bill 2353 will help make reimbursement methodologies more transparent and shine a light on the resulting reduction in access to care. COPACT is committed to working toward a solution that will ensure that we have the provider capacity to better serve the needs of vulnerable Oregonians. I ask your support for House Bill 2353.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Have you worked with the social workers on drafting such an amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Can I have the next panel, please?
Thank you.
Chair Greenlich and the members of the House Health Committee, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm Dr. Linnea Lindsay. I'm a primary care psychologist practicing in Corvallis, and I come to you on behalf of the Oregon Psychological Association today. I speak in support of this bill for improved transparency on the formulation and methodology for reimbursement rates for non-prescribing mental health providers. The current structure of healthcare requires most providers of non-prescribing mental health services to sign long-term reimbursement contracts. If we do not panel with insurance companies, we cannot be paid to see our patients. Most providers are paneled with numerous health insurance companies. The specifics of those contracts leave flexible the reimbursement rates and give health insurance companies the ability to adjust reimbursement rates annually. We receive these adjustments by mail. I received a notification of a 2013 rate change just last week. Professional ethics mandate that once we have established a therapeutic relationship with a patient, we may not drop them, even if the reimbursement level for their insurance company is lowered and our practices are compromised. Antitrust laws prevent us from meeting to discuss practice rates, so we are unable to negotiate as a professional organization with insurers. We must present as separate providers and/or organizations. We are seeking your help in creating greater transparency for providers to see the formulation in reimbursement with the hopes of more effectively anticipating potential changes in reimbursement. Increased reimbursement transparency would increase stability and access to the parity-established essential health benefit of mental health care for both consumers and providers in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, I am, for the record, Dave Reinhart, not representing a big pharma company, but the Oregon Society of Clinical Social Workers. I'd like to thank the chair as well as Representatives Kennemer, Thompson, and Kenny Geyer for your interest in this issue. It's an issue that I think is really critical at a time of healthcare transformation and as we try to live out the promises we made with respect to mental health parity. We've been at this issue for a while. Representative Kennemer first introduced legislation along with Representative Kotek back in 2010. We've had different iterations of that legislation. We've tried to get there. We were told by Representative Thompson in the 2011 session to work with the with all players, in particular the insurance companies, to come up with some solution to this. We have tried to do that. We've worked with the psychiatrists on a possible plan that we've talked about in this committee before. We reached out to the insurers. They listened, and that was it. We have not heard from them since. And in the meantime, the problem has only grown. This is about starting a conversation. I think it's an important conversation to have, again, in the context of healthcare transformation, and would urge your support. There are, by the way, some dash twos which would expand this to include the psychologists, counselors and family counselors and therapists. So I will also just say that I have the permission from the National Association of Social Workers, Oregon chapter, to tell you that they also support the legislation as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2353. We're not going to work this bill this session. We seem to have had enough taste for the pay parity issue. But we are going to work it in the interim. And I'd like to ask Representative Kennemer if he would lead this. We'll get you some help on it. We have to get some systematic way of dealing with this. We have to get the insurance companies to come open and talk to us about this. And if you're willing to do that, let's see if we can want to help on that.
Can I think about it?
Yes. No, absolutely.
It's a challenging ordeal, and I think it's way overdue. 33% of the social workers are gone. It's a huge issue, and
It's a tough crowd to talk, to negotiate with, frankly.
Mr. Chair?
Well, I'll be glad to help with you on that.
Thank you.
I think when we're doing this, this isn't so much a pay parity issue as just getting some form set up, because a lot of it comes back to us with just Medicaid rates, the way we've cut and cut. And so insurance companies are starting to look at that. Well, if government can get away with paying this low amount, then we're going to go pay down there. And I don't blame insurance companies for doing that. Yeah, so I think we need to step up and look at what we're doing and make sure we equalize this, because our CCOs are going to follow the model we set up and put in place as well. So we need to make sure all of them are protected, and we can set them across. We don't have to put them on a parity paying level, whether they're psychologists, social worker.
Representative Kitty Geyer?
Well, I just want to say I love this bill, and I really appreciate Representative Kenemer bringing it forward. I love the transparency. I love the methodical way in which we're trying to understand these issues. I'm guessing that you might be doing this as more of an informal work group, so there's not a fiscal. If that's the case, I hope that the intent of the Dash 2 is honored and that more people are at the conversation. I know there's an informal work group on the nurse parity issue too. It seems like there are some overlapping issues. To the extent that those things might go forward together, I think there's some economy of scale, some similar discussions that will be happening. So I think this is a great bill, and if we're not working it so we keep the fiscal low, I honor that, but I think the intent of it is great, and I really want to thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Thompson?
Yeah, I would just remind everybody that when we signed on to the Federal Affordable Care Act, we have agreed to put mental health right in the middle of primary health care. And I continue to be very concerned that we have absolutely no way to do that because of lack of access. And part of that lack of access has to do with, for lack of a better word, pay parity. What is a rational pay level to get people interested in this field? But we're headed for a brick wall with this thing. If we don't work out health care access across the board, including this, and I think this is a hugely important bill that we shouldn't leave long, because it's going to catch up with us when we have to start filing the reports of the federal government of how much improvement we've gotten in mental health care here in Oregon as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and we have to go back and say we don't have anybody to do it. This is not what the feds are going to be looking for.
Don't go away, Mr. Hall. I think it has caught up with us. It's just, I don't think we're going to have the ability to do it in this session. One of the nice things about having annual sessions is it's not that long to February. I'm going to ask the insurance folks to get involved with us. I think it's a serious question. And if it's not a question of equal pay, it's a question of rational pay. It's
a question of
exposing what the decisions are made, how they're made, and how we can, I'm sure the insurance companies have just as much a desire as we have to make sure they can serve their members. If they don't serve them, they go somewhere else. So this is a real issue. We're going to take it seriously. When we get a breath after we get all our bills done and the Senate bills, we're going to look at, I think we have several task forces, work groups that we're going to do informally. I'll try and share the load and get folks to be involved in those. I'm about to announce another one in a minute. But I think we can. I think that's what the interim is for, and I think these are. Important issues. And Con, you helping us, right, Mr. Hall? You've always been very useful. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2353. I am not going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3496. House Bill 3496 is a proposed bill by Representative Hoyle to move 9 licensing boards or so into the health licensing agency. There was a Senate bill that proposed moving 13 or so into the health license agency. We need to get the health license agency settled, we hope, in its new home, get its rules all comfortably worked out, get an interim director as a permanent director, and we're going to get to work on this one in the interim, too. Representative Hoyle has agreed to chair that work group. Again, think about which assignments you're interested in working on in the interim. We'll actually start our interim work on June 1st. As soon as we're done with a deadline on the Senate bills, we'll begin doing interim work while we're all here. It's less expensive and easier, and we'll get started on it, and we'll get started on these work group assignments, I hope, before we go home, in the 1st of August or whenever we finish our work.
With the work groups that we have on the table already, are you prepared to discuss with the speaker year-round legislature?
We could move to Michigan. Okay.
We're going to be here year-round.
2396 is not being opened, and it's off. Of the eight bills to carry forward...
3496.
I'm sorry, 3496.
3496.
Yeah, neither is the other number.
Any other number.
We have eight bills to carry over. Three of them have public hearings announced. I'm going to open public hearings and see if anybody wants to talk on them so I can come back on Wednesday. We still have a huge number of bills to do on Monday and Wednesday of next week. So I'd like to get, if anybody wants to testify in these hearings, get them out of the way. So I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3345, on House Bill 2085, and on House Bill 2088. Did anybody sign up to testify on any of those bills? No. Okay. Does anybody want to testify on any of those bills? Wow.
Okay.
Well,
we might. Okay. No.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3345, House Bill 2085, and House Bill 2088. I think I have eight work sessions to carry over. Will you check along with me and see if we have them right? I'm carrying over for work sessions only House Bill 2122, 2132, 3345, 2085, 2088, 3407, 3162, and 2118. Not all of those will, I think, actually happen. A couple of them are placeholder bills waiting for amendments. We'll see how they go. But they will, is that the right ones? Did I miss anything?
That's correct.
They'll carry over until Wednesday. How many bills does that?
Monday.
I mean, till Monday. How many bills does that put on the agenda for Monday? Besides these eight.
I can't count that.
Mr. Chair, did...
Take your shoes off.
You want to have a work session for House Bill 3420 as well?
Is it on the agenda? If it's on the agenda, we can do that.
Oh, darn it. Move it over for me.
Oh, I forgot.
He forgot.
It's an oversight.
Yeah.
16 bills.
16 plus these. Is that right?
16 also.
16 including. Okay, we have six... Is there any public hearings on those? We will have 16 bills on Monday's agenda. We've kept Friday's agenda pretty light. If those of you that are interested in marijuana, only one bill of the marijuana bills is left. That's 3460, which will still be a possible work session on Wednesday. And I will open up a work session, reopen the work session on House Bill 20. Representative Clem?
Yeah, thank you. I could just ask Mr. Ballack to come up.
Sure.
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Josh Ballack. I did review the email that was sent between Representative Nathanson and the committee. Really appreciate her taking the time to respond. Again, we really, really appreciate her the direction on this. There are some concerns around some of the uniformed credentialing process, some of the auditing, and exactly how that fits into the other reforms. But we do believe that working with others and the Senate that we can stay neutral on this, and you guys can move this, and we'll work on
Excellent.
It on the Senate. So,
great job.
Thank you all for your time, and thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a motion on House Bill 2020.
Yes.
We want the threes and fours, right?
We already have the threes and fours.
Already have. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2020 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2020 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Could you please call the roll?
Just to, if
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thank you for holding us.
Sorry, yeah, no, and thank you for giving us a few extra minutes. I thought about giving it a courtesy no, but then, which I love those, they almost never exist, but then Rep. Nathanson's staff texted me, asked me, what are you doing down there? So I don't really want Nancy Nathanson mad at me. It's a terrible thing to have. It doesn't happen often, so I'm a yes.
Okay. Would you call the roll, please, Debbie? Yeah.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative
Kinnaman? Aye.
Representative
Wigley? Aye.
Representative
Wigner?
Aye.
Vice
Chair Kenny Dyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Green?
Aye. House Bill 2020 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there a volunteer to carry it?
Nathanson,
that's right. Representative Nathanson will carry it.
Or else you're
She'll explain it. Close the work session on House Bill 2020, and unbelievably, finishing with 30 minutes to go. If we do this on Monday, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah, and we're holding Wednesday 5 to 6.
We are holding Wednesday 5 to 6, and in so try and keep available Wednesday 5 to 6 if we need it. And reward for that, we will not be meeting next Friday.
Oh, yes. Good.
Yes. Next a week from today. Hey, Clem, a week from today, we're free.
What's that?
We are adjourned.
Excellent.
Hey, guys.